Yeah, fantastic guest for you now, actually. You'd be very hard-pressed not to admit in the 26th year of this century that Spain is among the great football powers of the world. You could argue it's Europe's leading football power. A new book has come out. It's called Passion, Pasión, A Journey to the Soul of Spanish Football. It's written by Miguel Pereira, and he joins us now. Good evening, Miguel.
Good evening, Danny. Good evening, Nandi. I hope everything's well with you.
Everything is, this most joyous of all possible worlds has been enhanced by your presence, if I may say that. I'm going to go straight into this, Miguel. You are Portuguese. I know you've been in Spain and studied Spanish football. You're Portuguese. What decided you to write your book about the soul of Spanish football in the nation?
Well, I've lived in Spain since I was 22. I'm 41, so half of my life, basically. And I just published last year a book about Portuguese football, really, called Bring Me the Horizon. And when I finished the book...
Really loved it. Thank you. It was really, really good, Miguel. Loved it.
Thank you. And when I ended the book, I said to myself, I have to do the same, but regarding Spain, taking advantage of all the journeys I had around the country, the people I knew, the stories that I wanted to tell. So basically, it's just a follow-up of the previous book.
So, Miguel, in terms of the cultural side of Spanish club football, we'll get to that in a little minute. But, of course, people's view of Spanish football, and I guess Spanish football's view of itself has changed a little bit in the last year with the Euros win. How has that informed how you look at Spanish football?
I think it changed massively because I think until 20 years ago, Spanish football was Barcelona, Real Madrid, and that was it. And gratefully for Spanish football, the success of the national side after 2008, winning the Euros, then the World Cup, then the Euros again, then last year, winning once more, Sevilla's success in the Europa League, all other clubs like Atletico Villarreal also making a name for themselves, has expanded the way Spanish football is perceived outside of Spain. And that was one of the focus that I wanted to bring in the book, but also other stories about clubs that are not as well known outside of Spain as those clubs are. But culturally, football is immense in Spain, and they began to feel like winners in this century. They were the perennial underdogs until the turn of the century, and now they do feel like they are part of the winning culture.
Miguel, I'm a person of a certain vintage, so even in my lifetime, Spain has changed enormously. It went from being a country, when I was a youngster, still under a fascist junta, if you like, and now it's anyone's visited. It's a vibrant European democracy. How did football make survive that transition? Because we know that Franco, the Generalissimo, was a mad Real Madrid fan. But the country changed so dramatically in the past half century. How did football take? What part did football play in that?
Oh, it did change dramatically, and football greatly benefited from it because we moved from a close idea of Spain as a country where football was all about aggressiveness, attitude, not about flair, not about tactical acumen, into a new era where players were more able to express themselves on the pitch, tactics were more able to be studied. Influence from abroad came in during the 1980s with British managers, German managers, Dutch managers that helped to expand the way the Spanish saw the game. And also the idea that Spain, moving from a dictatorship into a democracy in the 1980s, brought with itself a way of dialogue between people who had been at war for so many times, also transcended into the game. And that's why the passing game that we so associate today with Spanish football really only began 30 years ago. And it began when people started to talk with themselves politically wise, cultural wise, and that transformed itself into sports and mainly into football. So if it wasn't for the transference between a right-wing dictatorship into a democracy, probably Spanish football will not be what it is today.
Tell us a bit about that, actually, Miguel, because there's no denying that Spanish football is very political, is very regionalised. How do you find the parallels between that and Portuguese football? Because, of course, they both became democracies in the mid-70s, very, very close to each other, Portugal and Spain. So how do you think that sort of unites the way their football has developed, I suppose, in the last 50 years?
Well, one of the things that greatly divides them is that Spain is probably the most complex nation in Europe by far. All those regional differences, all the cultural differences are there, and probably without excepting Yugoslavia, that is not here anymore, they are extremely diverse. While Portugal is a country which is very similar, north to south, there are some small regional differences, but mainly it's a different country. What changed in Portuguese football was they lost their African empire. They lost the ability to recruit players from Africa, players like Eusebio, who were key for their international success in the 1960s. So they had to move to Brazil, they had to move to other markets, they had to develop more their youth systems. And that's why Portugal has become, over the last 30 years, one of the best nations regarding producing youth talent, while Spain developed by enhancing the differences of their different regionalities. For so many decades, they were forced to feel as one and to think as one, but one close idea around the Castilian mindset of Franco, that when democracy came, then the people in Galicia, people in Catalonia, people in the Basque Country, people in the South Andalusia were more able to express themselves. And that brought a richness to the game, a diversity to the game that Portugal doesn't have, because essentially from north to south, Portugal is almost the same nation.
And when you talk about that sort of development and needing to find new ways to produce players, that's really fascinating to me, because as you said at the very start when you started talking to us, it was, if we go back to Spain winning the Euros in 2008, in 2012, the World Cup in 2010 in between, we kind of think, I think outside Spain, we always have this feeling that Real Madrid, Barcelona, Spain is sort of interchangeable, that it's sort of part of the same Venn diagram. How important is that in the development of modern Spanish football, that we look to the Basque Country now for a lot of the production of Spanish players? And especially when you look at the very separate country, separate history of Spain and the Basque Country, and how they see themselves as, especially the Basque Country sees itself as very different to Spain. How different does that make the side that won the European Championship in 2024?
It's greatly different to the one that won the treble between 2008 and 2012. I think that generation of great players was a mix of the winning mentality of Real Madrid, a club that is focused on winning at all costs, represented by the likes of Iker Casillas or Sergio Ramos, and the tactical mindset that Johan Cruyff brought to Catalonia and to Barcelona that they didn't have until the 1990s, and that was represented well by the Xavis, the Busquets, the Iniestas. So they kind of mixed together so many years in the youth teams of the national side that they ended up following that formula that proved to be so successful. While if we look to the generation that won the Euros last year and are big candidates to win, or at least to fight for the World Cup, or probably the next two or three international competitions, because they all are so young, is that finally they got the ability to bring players from different sides, also very young, but with different ways to express. And at the same time, for the first time in Spanish history, they were able to bring people that were from different cultures. It's the first time that players who were born in Africa or were sons of people who were born in Africa or in South America were able to play for the national side. Players like Lamine Yamal, players like Nico Williams, who were decisive for the national side. And that, alongside with the Basque players, as you mentioned, who has finally found a way to express themselves within the game, with two sides that have developed so much over the past 10, 15 years, like Athletic Club and Real Sociedad, they brought a different imprint to the national side. So they are not as dependent of Barcelona and Real Madrid as they once were. And that is also a way to find a different type of success, a success that expands to all nations and not only to the two big sides of it.
Miguel, look, first of all, I guess looking at threats in the future, you obviously have the situation in Spain where the Basques and particularly the Catalans are looking for independence from the Castilian centre. But more widely, the continued financial dominance of world football by the Premier League. And I wonder whether this is going to be when, you know, yet if one more American owner comes in, suddenly you'll have American owners with the ability to change the Premier League yet again, because the voting rights will stack up. How does Spanish football continue to react to the power of the Premier League? Because we've seen, for instance, Barcelona desperately paddling in the water, splashing about with pulling financial levers. This is a lot of pressure coming from England, isn't it?
Yeah. Over the past, I would say, 5 years, the Spanish league looks to the Premiership as rivals, as direct rivals, because probably that is one of the main reasons why Florentino Perez, Real Madrid chairman, has been so adamant that the Super League needs to go ahead. Because the Super League for clubs like Real Madrid or Barcelona, and even clubs in Italy or in Germany, they see it as the only way to compete financially with the owners from the United States or from the Middle East that are now populating the Premier League. So Real Madrid, Barcelona, and probably also Atletico Madrid look forward to the Super League as a salvation to the situation that they're living, while smaller clubs who are already used to be swallowed up by the Real Madrid and Barcelona usually in the past take their best players, and now they are selling the players directly to the Premier League, see them as an opportunity to make some money and then to invest that money into develop youth talent. And that's also why one of the reasons why over the past 5 to 6 years there have been so many under 21, under 19 and under 15 Spanish national sides winning competitions, because smaller clubs understood that they now need, like the Portuguese in a way, to focus more on youth development than to sell that talent to the Premier League or to the bigger fortunes in Europe. And while at that moment, Real Madrid and Barcelona and Atletico Madrid are focused on creating a competition that allows them to stay at the top of the pyramid, at least on the continental level.
Now, we opened by saying that you're actually a Portuguese person, although you've lived, as you say, for half your life in Spain. Let's end on a positive then. If I said to you one thing, what is your favourite thing about Spanish football? What would you say to me?
Well, I think the favourite thing is in the book title. It's the way, the passionate way they live it. I think it's a country that leaves football 24/7. Everywhere you go, people breathe football, talk about football all the time. It's a pity that it's not as community-based as it happens in the UK or in Germany, and people tend to flock more to winning sides like Real Madrid and Barcelona. But in a sense, they really feel football as an indispensable part of their lives, and that's something that I really love and respect, something that probably other European nations lack in that sense, and that's why I wanted to reflect it on the book title.
Well, Miguel, thank you for joining us. If you're, I haven't yet had a chance to read your book, but if it's as good as your book about Portuguese football, then it's going to be a favourite in the Kelly household. I recommend it to you people, Sight Unseen. The book is called Passion, The Search for the Soul of Spanish Football, and he's called Miguel Pereira. And I thanks him for joining us here on TalkSport this evening.